If you want to start on the Byram deal, all right, sure. It's July 15th. Let's talk a little Sabres offseason. My question would be, I got one question for everybody out there. If you still follow the hockey team in town, the Buffalo Sabres, and pay attention to their offseasons, if they had not traded Peterka because they didn't want to, like Peterka wanted them to move him.
Right.
So if he didn't want to be moved, what would the offseason have been? Because here's Bo Byram on the team, extended for 2 years, because you couldn't get a deal done. You couldn't get a trade done. If you had not traded Peterka, who wanted that to happen, he made that happen. What would your offseason have been? A Connor Clifton trade and Alex Lyon? Is that your offseason?
That might have been it, which is that is the equivalent of nothing.
That is doing nothing.
It is adding a rotational goalie and a third pair defenseman that maybe plays, if you're lucky, he's on the ice 17 minutes a night.
Yeah.
Like, if you're lucky. So, they bring back Byram, by the way, with the Peterka trade, adding a defenseman. Right? Like, their big move of the offseason was adding a defenseman. Two of their biggest three moves were adding defensemen. And yet, they still have, for now, kept him around. I don't know, though, that this means he won't be traded. It doesn't seem to make it the favorite, right? Like, all along, I've thought the most likely outcome was he would get dealt. And is that different now? Because he's under contract? I mean, I guess another team no longer has control over the contract situation. He signed a two-year deal, so if I'm right in the rules, he can't sign a long-term extension for a year, and if a team was maybe wanting to do that, that's now off the table for 12 months. So I think maybe it makes a trade harder to not deal him before arbitration and instead do a two-year contract. So I don't know. I kind of think it's more likely to me this morning than it has been for 6 months that he's going to start next season on the roster and probably in the top pair.
On the top pair as an expensive pairing for Darlene, despite being a guy that is not good away from Darlene and good with Darlene, which is true for a lot, right?
That's right.
That's pretty much everybody. I mean, I don't hate that he's on the team. Big picture stuff with the Sabres, I wonder. I wonder if they've been spooked off of those early long extensions that they signed everybody to, right? For a while there, it was Cousins, Thompson, Samuelson. I mean, everybody got extensions.
Lukanen was the next year, but that didn't go great.
You think they've been scared off those?
It'd be hard not to. I mean, how many of them really went great?
They thought it was good business, and it looks like they've been scared off it.
Yeah, the Tage deal went great. You sign Tage early, and you probably have him for $3 million less per year than you otherwise would have. But Samuelson, it didn't work, and Cousins, it didn't work, and Lukanen, it didn't work. So how's the strategy going right now? I mean, they really should have bought out Samuelson this offseason. That one went, I think, as poorly as it possibly could have after 58 games in the league, if that's the number. That's the number in my head. So that could be it. That would imply, though, that would imply they don't want to sign Byram to a long-term deal right now.
Yep.
That this wasn't all about Byram doesn't want to be here, although that might also be the case because there's no role here in a power play situation that he might be looking for, but the Sabres at the same time haven't ever seemed to give an indication that they were like trying to sign him to an 8-year contract, and it was Byram that was telling them no. I mean, whenever Kevin Adams has kind of been asked about him, he's never really mentioned him as part of the core, which I think is probably good, right? Like, because this player is, it's debatable how good he really is. But I don't think anybody's ready to tell you he's great, right? Would anybody disagree with that?
No.
That he's great?
No, he seems to be one of these players that you hope some GMs think more of him than he really is, right?
Right.
You hope that, I guess what you were hoping is that Byram got the glow up that Cousins got when he got traded to the Senators, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, the workhorse defensive stalwart. And it's like, that's not at all what you're getting here. So maybe that's a part of it. I don't know. The whole thing, it's tough because keeping Byram doesn't have to be bad. He's He can be a decent player for you. He can go. You can love your top four now if you really want to. What? I mean, how long will it stick together? Dahlin and Byram, and then Power and Kesselring.
Sure.
And that's my top four.
Then that sounds
and then
pretty
Samuelson's
good.
In my bottom pair with somebody else.
Timmins, probably.
Okay. And
like that on paper sounds like a pretty darn good blue line.
That's not bad. Right? Yeah. It's not bad. But the problem is you are very far from the playoffs. And what are you going to do to make up the gaps? What are you going to do to make a difference? You know, maybe the Byram deal, it's not exactly the same, but Garrett Wilson got a big contract yesterday. Why'd they sign him? Because he's good. Byram is not Garrett Wilson. But
no.
I don't want to live in a spot, Joe, where I'm endlessly saying, oh, get rid of everybody, because that's not the single player that makes you better. It's tough to evaluate the Sabres with Kevin Adams at the helm right now, because the general feel is that it's always in action, and it's always can-kicking down the road. And this Byram deal looks like a can-kick to me. We're not ready. We don't like the value. We don't have to get rid of him. So we'll sign him for 2 years, and what's the chance in the next 2 years he gets traded for a draft pick at the deadline? 80%? 40%? It's definitely a likely outcome. Right. I mean, if you were to set the over-under on years, how many more years will Byram play with the Sabres, you'd set it at 2.5, and everybody alive would bet the under.
Mm-hmm.
If you set it at 1.5 complete years, you might bet the under. Does he get traded at this deadline because... ready for this? Hey, Byram might be desirable. Guys, it's not just a rental. There's a year of term on this, too.
Mm-hmm.
We heard that a million times. The Sabres did that when they traded for Brad Boyes. So
yes.
It more represents a disappointment about the larger offseason. And I can't say that Kevin Adams could do everything he wants because no move clauses do exist. But I came to this offseason hoping it would be some version of, hey, could they package Paterka and Byram and 9 for something of real significance? Like, hey, can we dream big about a move? And instead, what did we get? Paterka got traded in a deal where it was, well, they did the best they could, and Byram got re-signed because they couldn't find a deal.
Right.
And the 9th pick got drafted because they couldn't find a deal.
Mm-hmm.
And Alex Lyon came in, which I think is maybe their best move this offseason, was to get a decent goalie at a good amount, a journeyman who might be able to help backstop your backup spot or even take the starting job if your backup or whatever, if your starter isn't good enough. So the whole offseason is just uninspiring, which is pretty much kind of their theme quite often.
Isn't it really hard to make the case that they got better this offseason?
It is hard to make the case they got better. It is easy to make the case that they got slightly different. Because they did. They got slightly different.
I love that set. It's easy that they got slightly different.
Slightly different.
Slightly different.
One forward of significance out, one defenseman of significance in. That's your offseason.
Right.
And your backup goalie, again, I still like that move because they needed someone that wasn't Reimer or Anderson, and this is their new version of that. This is their new Comrie. This is their new Alex Lyon is a guy that signed for the backup money to try and get some games in the net.
Yep. Well, like, really, what they did add, and I'm optimistic about, you know, a couple of these individuals, but their offseason consisted of the biggest guy they brought in was a defenseman who played on Utah's third pair last year. They brought in the Red Wings' backup goaltender, and they brought in a fourth liner from Columbus. And the Penguins' number six defenseman. That's their offseason. By the way, every one of those teams, look at the teams they brought guys in from that were not playing important roles. Kesselring, third pair defenseman in Utah. Lyon, backup goalie in Detroit. Timmins, sixth defenseman in Pittsburgh. None of these teams were good. They brought depth role players off teams that weren't even good from last year. And that's going to make them better. They got rid of a guy that was playing an important role off a team that wasn't very good in Paterka. So I wouldn't make the case that they're better unless Kesselring is way better than he was with the Mammoth. Or, like, again, here we are kind of waiting probably for young guys to save the day, right? Like, Owen Power, please become an elite defenseman. Like, elite defenseman. Like, Norris conversation, maybe defenseman. I don't know if he can even do that with, you know, being a second pair guy and second power play minutes, but whatever, that caliber of player. or Benson become like a 70-point guy. That's somebody catch lightning in a bottle, because the moves that they make, I just think it's, sure, tinkering. It's tinkering moves.
It's tinkering.
It's stuff that can make you marginally better, but is it something that's going to make you make up a 15-point gap between what you were in the playoffs? Because that would be incredible to me if Michael Kesselring, Alex Lyon, and Josh Doan, who again I kind of all like to some degree, it would be incredible though if they were the catalyst to being a 75-point team versus being like a 90-point team.
And a 90-point team often is, you know, not enough.
It's not right. That's just in the race.
Right. Well, tinkering, is it very much like what they did with their coaching staff, which was what, change out the strength and conditioning coach? And what they do with GM, they tinkered. They added some pieces around the guy that was there. They didn't change the GM. They added a senior advisor.
Right.
They added a special assistant. So the offseason has been about tinkering in just about every department. They tinkered with the GM office. They tinkered with the coaching staff. And they tinkered with the roster. Maybe that's what they wanted to do. Because if Kevin Adams doesn't get them to the playoffs this year, if, by the way, they do, you ever think about that? What if they did make it? Would there be a parade? Would he feel like he's a made man now for decade or five more years?
Lifetime contract.
You've shown you could get them there. So, all right, well, I know I can get them there. I'll do it again. Sometimes I wonder about that. Again, like the Byram deal on its own, I don't think is terrible. It's not. They certainly have the cap space. They are spending more against the cap than I thought they would. They're going to have about $5 million in space, which I'm impressed that they've spent that much. They could still, of course, spend five more, but I don't know who you'd spend it on.
No, there's no free agent available.
There's nobody out there now.
It would have had to have been a trade.
It just all
a trade where you'd be acquiring more salary. You could want to do that all you want. That's trading a prospect for someone else's good player, right? That's a trade everybody wants to see. It's a trade they probably also want to make, but you're at the time of the year where I don't think you're really finding that from anybody. On the cap thing, this is kind of weird in the league, I guess, where remember when the NFL cap has gone up, with like really drastically went up the first time, and then after that, and the NBA was the same thing where, hey, you got all this new money. Cap went up. Go ahead. What did teams do? Spent it. Right? Like, they went nuts. All the NBA, I remember the first NBA offseason where that happened, and it was totally, remember Matthew Dellavedova? Like this Australian guy.
I remember him. If you're going like to his contract, I do not remember
He was the guy that was with LeBron in that first finals against the Warriors. Hospital from chasing Steph Curry around.
Yes,
he got $30 million a year the first time the NBA cap went up. And everyone was like, what did you just do? $30 million a year. The NHL right now, everybody is way below the cap. Nobody spent the money. And is that just because nobody has money to spend? That could be because you can't renegotiate contracts in the NHL, right? NFL cap goes up, you can get a bunch of star players saying, oh, I want more. I want to rip up my deal and start over. And you can't do that in the NHL because, like, Tage Thompson can't tell the Sabres, I want $10 million a
year. That's right.
He can't say that. So the Sabres right now, like, they're middle of the pack. Nashville, Minnesota, Carolina, Seattle, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Calgary, Columbus, Winnipeg, San Jose, Chicago, Anaheim. All have more cap space right now.
Well, one possible explanation for that is, if we could borrow a headline from the NFL, collusion. And the major difference between the NFL and the NHL. So the cap goes up. That's great. The cap goes up. A lot of teams are not going to want to go anywhere near it. And in the NFL, why do teams spend above the cap? Why do teams work these contracts to... That's one thing you can do in the NFL. You can massage it and be way over the cap in a certain year, but you're under it on your numbers. In the NHL, if I'm Toronto, or if I'm trying to pick a team here, Boston, or teams that spend at the cap, Toronto has some room.
The teams right now that are spending right at the cap are Vegas, right. Montreal, Florida, Edmonton, Philly, the Rangers,
okay,
Tampa.
So what I'm getting at is I probably have a good handful of teams in the NHL that I know will not even come close to spending the cap ever and have no interest.
Right.
So now my market as an NHL team is, all right, how many teams are willing to give this player this money? Is it 10? It's not 32. Mm-hmm. In the NFL, you probably have to worry about more teams, 25 to 30 that will spend because the money's just, you know, printing every single year. In the NHL, I just don't know that's true.
Mm-hmm.
You've got teams operating at a loss and getting revenue-sharing money to stay above board. In the NFL, I've got every single player salaries paid by the television contracts.
Almost like if Myles Garrett were to hit the open market, how many of the 32 teams would be willing to give him $40 million a year?
32.
And when Mitch Marner hits the open market, how many of those teams would be willing to give him $15 million?
Six. That's what I think. Might be 10. Might be 12.
But it's not 32.
It's not 32.
Yeah.
Nope.
That's probably right.
Anyway, yeah, they did not spend all the cap space. All right. So Bo Byram is back for two more years. Maybe. Maybe they could just trade him. Maybe this locks in. I feel like they're not going to trade him, because if you were going to trade him, how does it work with arbitration, the rules on arbitration? He goes to arbitration. He wins that. You could still trade him.
You can, yeah. And all he can determine on his own is
term.
Term, which they gave him the term he probably would have picked anyway.
He picked 2 years, and they gave him 2 years. They walk him right to unrestricted free agency. I don't know. To me, Byram is a guy that when they acquired him, it was somewhat exciting, and now he's just, I don't know, he's not exactly an inspiring player to me. They want to be tougher to play against. They want to be defensively strong. He's not that. He's not one of those players.
No, he's not that. In fact, if you look at like some of the fancy numbers, he's got some good offensive numbers, which are probably all with Dahlin. He's got some bad defensive numbers.
Yep.
Bad defensive numbers.
Well,
he's your most one-dimensional offensive defenseman in the whole core. Like, undoubtedly.
Yep.
Like, he is the most one-dimensional defenseman that they have. You can have guys like that, but you would like to believe they could coexist. Without the superstar. But I do like him with Dahlin more than others. I don't think you need to value that at $6 million a year. And it's why I think a trade still makes the most sense for him, because I can plug in a guy next to Dahlin and get pretty good results with almost anyone. Jacob Bryson's had good numbers with Dahlin. That being said, I do think I think Byram is better with Dahlin than others. His ability to move around the offensive zone, he's a good skater. I think he's got a good shot for his position. I think offensively, he does give you more from Dahlin's going to give his partner a lot of opportunities, no matter who that person is. And he's going to give you a lot of offensive zone time, because when Dahlin's on the ice, you're often going to have the puck. Byram, I think, can capitalize on that more than others. I just think you've seen now, though, that's not worth $6 million, because the second Dahlin goes out of the lineup and I'm on a 10-game losing streak while Byram's my number one defenseman, it looks like a disaster. So he's a fine player. I think with Dahlin, you're going to get good results, but you better not take him away from him.
So then, not kidding, a fireworks accident goes down as non-football injury. I guess that's right. Yeah, NFI, non-football injury list for Najee Harris. Welcome back. It is Give 716 Day, give716.org. Next hour, I'll just give you a little sneak preview, 5 o'clock. Am I allowed to do this? Do they want these to be like secrets until the time comes?
No, it's on the website. You can tell it.
It is on the website. Starting at 5, the first 200 donors of $50 or more will receive Bison's tickets. Then there are other Sabres, Bills, Bandits tickets going to be available this evening. So stay close for that. Give716.org. Brad May was in town this morning, and Tim Connolly as well. They made an appearance at a bank, and I talked to Brad last hour about, you know, the Sabres. He's one of the many alumni who think of Buffalo very fondly. And why wouldn't Brad May do that? I mean, he had some special years here right out of juniors. So that isn't surprising, and also worked in their booth as well. Just had me thinking about, like, it's Give 716 Day. It's also Imagine the Sabres Being Good Day a little bit, because there's some nostalgia with this. Tickets are being given out. The schedule is out, right? Like, you can kind of get excited for it. As opposed to other days, well, this is at least true of me, as opposed to other days when I think maybe more about their shortcomings and the playoff drought and everything like that. It's a day where you might not be as inclined to do that. I think the idea of going to their games right now seems pretty good, because it's so hot. It'd be nice to get away from that, but, you know, no games for a while. I was here with Bulldog, as you probably know, for almost all of the Bills drought. In fact, when I moved back to Buffalo from Rochester, that was the 2000 season, and that was the first year of the Bills drought. And we would, I mean, it would be depressing, but also cathartic, you know, and sometimes interesting to sort of reflect on the playoff drought. 17 years for the Bills it went. Now it's 8 years ago, but 17 years in a row without a playoff appearance. And we would naturally, in those discussions, hear from fans who were new college graduates, you know, early 20s, legal drinking age, that had no, would have had no memory of the Bills ever being good. You know, I mean, for me, as a child, I got into them when I was about seven. I feel like that's around seven or eight is around the age where kids start to follow sports. Like, you can actually do that. It's different than it was in the 70s, but, you know, any younger than that, what are you going to be able to remember or do with it? But, you know, maybe 10 years old, whatever. So 99 is a playoff team, Bills. Then it's not until 2017. 17-year gap. And so a 25-year-old might have nothing and would call in every kind of every time we almost talked about this. Somebody would raise their hand and say, yeah, like, kind of hard to imagine what it would feel like or look like because I've never seen it. And the Sabres are almost at that point where it's 14 years and you could have just graduated from high school last month and have no memory of them ever even being in the playoffs, which is incredible and sad because that is so by far the best part of hockey. It's what it's all for is the playoffs. I don't know if football is the same like that. Right now the Bills are in a moment when it's about the Super Bowl, and like that's one thing, but you know, for most of their history, they were not, and it didn't detract enough from the experience of going to games and following them that it meant the Bills didn't sell out all the time. I mean, they did anyway, even though there was really no realistic hope of a championship during like the Brady years, so they still were able to thrive, you know, and draw and pack the stadium. And hockey, you know, different. It's just like the sport itself, the quality of it, the drama, it goes from the regular season to the playoffs in the NHL. And I'm not telling you something you don't know, but it goes from three or four to like nine. I mean, it's just completely different. People who are not hockey fans watch it. It starts to matter to them, because the games are so exciting, you get overtime and all of it. And to think that we have a new group of young adults that can't even tell you what it was. They just know from mom or dad or their, you know, older siblings what 2006 was like. It's just once in a while it hits you that it's been that long. I don't think a 2011 is very special at all. It's 2006. It's not making the playoffs, it's like winning is what I think about when I think about the distance, the amount of time it's been when the Sabres have been pretty lonely. 2011 was fun for a couple months. The team was sold and that all sounded very exciting. And it felt great there for a minute. They've never been back. So I think of, you know, those great 2 years prior to that, 10 or 11 aren't what my mind goes back to. And yeah, like, again, you probably know, if you're a fan of the team, you probably have heard us or family or friends talk about just how completely obsessed we got with them. And I've always said, and I would use those years as an example, that while the Bills are bigger and have a hold over more people, it's a bigger everything. Bills versus an NHL team versus the Sabres. There is something about when the Sabres are hot that is better than the Bills. Like for me, there is something more intense about it, or just like it almost feels like we're walking around all the time and we're all thinking about it. I don't know if that is true, but it's just, you just become obsessed. And That's what's being missed here. And that I think, somebody could tell a 20-year-old about the party in the plaza and different players and features of those teams. Okay, well, I can comprehend that. I can appreciate that. Wow, a lot of people were down here and everything. I thought it was, I mean, I'm not going to know. I'm biased, but I thought it might have, the Sabres thing at that time might have been the greatest sports scene anywhere in the country. A team and a place. And I think, you know, the Bills have something bigger, wider ranging. It's a different, I'd put it in a different way. I don't know exactly how, but I wouldn't put it the same way. What they are when, you know, it's on, you know? Like, and the Sabre thing is every day. A playoff team, it's that they're not literally playing every day, but it's either usually a game day or the next day will be. Like, it's a off and on, right? So they just consume you, those series. And how do I even know? I mean, I was there. I remember it. And, you know, in the 80s and 90s, too, as a kid and then a young adult, I can go back to it. Even though it's been that long, I can go back in my mind to the obsession that that the Sabres in the playoffs would or could become. And, you know, talking to Brad May, that's what came through to me is, like, and he said the same in so many words, just that Buffalo is just waiting for a winner. And then, I don't know, do we go back to 05, 06 if this team is just like a playoff caliber team? Maybe it would take more than that. But I do, as frustrating as this kind of tends to make me, as frustrated as this tends to make me, because it's so easy for sports teams that it's just going to be sitting there waiting for them if they get good. I think it is. And, you know, you have baseball teams, you have a lot of them, even maybe, that are killing it financially with hardly any effort toward winning, relatively speaking. It just shouldn't be that easy. It shouldn't be so easy for a sports team to just get away with mediocrity for so long. You know, I want them to win, and if they do, I'll be excited. But it really isn't really fair. It's so easy for a sports team to just have you when they make any kind of progress. I don't know if the Sabres are that exactly right now. I think they have a long way to go. And I asked Paul a couple of times with regard to the schedule, because they have a home-heavy first month plus this year. Like, what do you think of their chances to get the fans in a good enough place where we're going to be ready to get into it, like, right away? What is it going to feel like if the Sabres start like 4-1 or something? Is that going to matter? Is that going to be enough? Maybe it will. Maybe that's enough, a small number of games to get people to a place where, like, all right, I'm into this. Let's see where it goes. I mean that generally, but also in terms of the building and how they will do. I think it's tough for the fans, season ticket holders or the season ticket holders. It's tough for the fans when, this was me, when you have a lot of games packed together, because going down there 4 times in 7 nights, and they've got a couple of those like that this year, it just it becomes a lot. But early in the season, that's the case. They start with the Rangers on October 9th, and then after a game in Boston on the following Saturday, it's Monday afternoon, Wednesday night, Saturday afternoon, road game Wednesday night, Friday night, like it's right away, all the way through November 6th. It's 10 home games out of 14. So we'll see it'll be interesting to see what kind of crowds they draw right away, and then depending on how those first few games go.
Give 716 day here on Sabres Live. We are at KeyBank on Sheridan, and KeyBank playing a huge role always, but specifically this hour as well, matching donations up to $15,000. Marty, we are approaching $900,000. We're hoping to be at that number by the end of the show here today in total through the efforts of the Bills and Sabres foundations, and most importantly, Western New York, all counties, connected to Buffalo and the area. It has been a really nice setup for us here at KeyBank today. Alumni Brad May, Tim Connolly, yourself, Sabretooth.
Sabretooth getting in the picture. I love it. You know, just making sure he does his goat crossing like RJ did many years ago.
Yes.
That's the way it goes. And look, I mean, I feel like I set the tone last night. So when we were
well, I stole your shirt from last night. So thank you for that,
by the way.
Yeah.
But when we were getting ready to launch at 7:16,
yeah,
he is going to lift his shirt and like do a gritty right on TV here, talking about Sabretooth. But when we were getting ready at 7:14, 7:15 to launch, we were at 70,000, like the soft launch. Mm-hmm. And then I said to you, within a couple of minutes, we'll be at 100,000. And I'm daring everybody. And I'm like, as soon as it goes on social media. And it stayed at 74,000.
You had a lump in your throat.
I was like, oh, no. And then all of a sudden, there was an update on the screen. And it was 105. Mm-hmm. And then maybe, what, an hour later, it was 300,000. Like, it just, it was so good.
As we were raffling off Sabres, Bills, Bandits, autographed jerseys, which was great.
Pictures.
Plenty of random trivia. Little did we know at that time, the home opener was going to be the Sabres and Rangers.
How do you feel about that?
I was just going to ask you, what's the early line? Thursday, October 9th, home opener at KeyBank Center.
I don't think you can set a line because the Rangers are playing two nights before against Pittsburgh. Look, this is just me, and I know you can't have a perfect world, but I would hope that everybody's first game of the season would be against a team that's just playing their first game. You get 32 teams. You can have 16 teams played.
You don't know that the Sabres aren't playing the night before on the road.
Oh, you're right, because we won't know until 1 p.m. today. My mind was thinking, that's the first game of the season, but that's the home opener.
I'm not sure you'd make much of a detective.
That is probably the most correct statement you've made on this show.
Is it the season opener, Jeff, or is it just the home opener?
It's just the home opener because the schedule hasn't been announced.
No, I don't know. Producer Jeff is now trying to.
Well, maybe he has inside information, and I don't want to put Jeff
in
the
it is
spot.
The season opener.
Season
as well.
Okay, well, right. Then there you go.
So I wouldn't make much of a detective because clearly well, I missed them.
I like that you're thinking about all options. Maybe they're playing Wednesday at 3:30 p.m. because
I know where they're playing. KeyBank Center.
KeyBank Center. Yes, 7 p.m. Obviously, that's this time for the home games during the week.
Usually, okay, so back to your point. It'll be the first game for the Sabres and the second for the Rangers.
Second for the Rangers. So I'm like, okay, I mean, maybe that works for the Sabres. They get to see what the Rangers are doing, what you pre-scout and whatever, and then you use that to for your preparation. But I would hope the league would say, okay, everybody's playing their first game against a team that's playing their first game. I don't know that at the end of the day you play 82 games, it makes much of a difference, but I think I would like to do that in the first few days. Now, yesterday, we talked about Bo Byram a lot and his contract. And I'm driving around to the 716, Give 716 launch event. And I've got, WGR on. I'm listening to Mike Shope, and he had Paul Hamilton on. And Mike had a question for Paul that made me almost want to call him. When you're listening to the show and you're like, oh. Because it's a question that fans have asked me as well yesterday, so I'm going to bring it up. He's like, so we talked about Byram playing with Dahlin, being a really good partner for Rasmus Dahlin. The numbers dictate that tell the story that they were a top pair in the National Hockey League. But Mike's question to Paul was, well, if Rasmus Dahlin is that good of a player, why do you need another really good player to play with him? Why wouldn't you be able to say, hey, Byron will be on a different pair and somebody else will slide in with Rasmus Dahlin? Which is a great question. But the first thought I had is, okay, well, who plays with Cale Makar? A $7.25 million defenseman in Devon Toews. And maybe Toews got the contract because of playing with Cale Makar, but I think Byram benefited this year from playing with Rasmus Dahlin. Who plays with Quinn Hughes? Filip Hronek. How much does he make? $7.25 million. So It's not.
You're cherry picking, though. Not every team has that luxury.
It's not every team that has that luxury. You're 100% sure. But if the Sabres have that luxury right now to say, mm-hmm. we can put Dahlin and Byram together and make that a top, top defense pair. And if Owen Power and Kesselring hit it off and they really are good as a second pair, then you're all set. Now, I get it. If Power, Kesselring don't work well, maybe you say, okay, we put Power with Dahlin, you put Byron Kesselring, can move things around. Colorado has had Taze and Makar play together all the time. And Vancouver has had Hughes and Hronek play together 99% of the time when they're healthy. So you got to find that. But those are probably the best two of the best defensemen in the league, and their partners are really good defensemen as well. So you're loading up the top pair.
Who's the Rangers' top pair?
At this moment, I say Adam Fox with, right? Because it was Ryan Lindgren that was his partner for many years. Mm-hmm. And Ryan Lindgren was not a $7.5 million defenseman, was not a $6 million defenseman, but he was a guy
getting
that
well paid in Seattle.
He's
now
getting well paid, well, because he earned that mm-hmm. playing with Adam Fox and supporting him and make Fox better. But last year, Fox had a down year because Lindgren wasn't healthy and not playing at the same level. You need somebody that can play at the top level with your top players. If not, it'd be too easy to say, well, put your best guy with your worst guy. That's not how it works. That's not what you want to do.
Right. But at times last year, we saw Dahlin, Byram, and Power on separate pairs, did we not?
We did see the left side on separate pair, and then we saw Samuelson, you know, playing a little higher in the lineup with Dahlin.
Oh, here's
at
a question.
Time.
Yeah. Who's the most important defenseman this year?
I still think it's Rasmus
Dahlin. Sorry. Outside of Rasmus Dahlin, who is the most important defenseman on the Sabres to make this all work?
I think it's Owen Power. Because for me, like, I know Kesselring is coming in with high hopes and expectations to be the right shot defenseman that Owen Power has not had that partner over his years with the Buffalo Sabres. Mm-hmm. But I want to put the ownership and the pressure and the heat on Power to say, you now have to be the leader of that pair. Yep. You can't just think, well, Kesselring will be my partner and it's going to go. No, be the leader. Bring him along with you. Raise the level. So I think that's what, because if you can go Dahlin and Byram together and not have to worry about Power Kesselring, you are in a much different place defensively than you were last year, in my opinion.
Some of the news from last night, you may have missed it. The Sabres do avoid arbitration with defenseman Bo Byram. They signed him to a 2-year contract with an average annual value of $6.25 million. I think there were some hopes, Derek, that last night this may have been a sign and trade. We're a number of hours since the signing. I think we can kind of safely say that that probably won't be happening. And you had mentioned this a lot in the last few weeks, kind of as free agency wrapped up and the Sabres roster very much was taking form. You were somebody that wasn't kind of staring daggers into the St. Louis Blues roster sheet. You were doing it, but you were much more along the lines of, I think this is probably it.
Boy. Yeah, Josh, I have an assignment for you. Whatever we come back with after this break, I need you to play ska music so I can have a better day. Because I'm about to talk about the Buffalo Sabres. I said it, and two things. One, how dare I try to have fun this offseason? How dare I dream? Like, you fool of a Took.
I mean, the Marner thing was probably a bit much, but the rest of it I could get behind.
But that's the face to the ideal. At least the Bills took care of that business of, like, the ideal. Hey, really cool defensive end. Maybe Miles Garrett, maybe not. But you add someone that's a recognizable name. And he has production. And he's good. With the Buffalo Sabres, I dare to dream of literally just add anyone that people recognize. No. Derek, you silly goose. Sit down. How dare I try to have fun with this? How dare I look at the St. Louis Blues roster and think, maybe they can get Jake Neighbors. Maybe they can pay up, throw a couple prospects in there, and get Dylan Holloway. Maybe they do something fun for a change. Fool of a took. And I said it, and I know that it's still like a non-zero chance that something can happen with Byram. But the minute that a trade didn't happen before July 1st, they're done with the roster. This is the day one roster. Be ready, because you're getting Jack Quinn in your top six. Probably Zach Benson or Jason Zucker on the other part of it. Or you're hoping that Isaac Rosane can translate his successful season in the AHL immediately to the NHL. And as Zucker said earlier last year, hope is a blank strategy. A bleep strategy, so to say. Is Byram the player perfectly fine? Yes. As a matter of fact, I think you got a good deal on it. 6.5 for 2 years. It's a good cap hit on that player. If he's logging first line minutes and playing next to Rasmus Dahlin, he's going to look fine. He's going to look good playing next to Dahlin, which means it's going to be worth it. So you got a good AAV on the player. You have a very good defensive core, it looks like. Theoretically. But if Kesserling can't translate to more minutes and playing next to Owen Power, or if Matias Samuelsson continues to be Matias Samuelsson, you're still going to have problems on defense. And I'm going to tell, I'm saying this right now, on July 15th of 2025, if this defense or the goaltending does not take a step forward this year and you make no changes because of it, fraudulence of an executive group.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. If the defense and the goaltending doesn't take a step forward, you are likely a worse team than you were last year.
Which also means
just on paper, you probably are.
But that also means the things that you actually tried to change also still didn't work, which means there's something systemic within your coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And they never changed a single one of them. Outside of the head coach, and they were theorizing it was all Granato and his primary assistant. That's it. So we're going to bring in Lindy, and we're bringing over Seth Appert from down the road. What about the other guys? What? They're fine. If nothing changes for the better on the back end or in the goals allowed column, that also means that you had a terrible extension with a goaltender that had a one-year wonder.
Mm-hmm. Which has somewhat become a problem for the Sabres as well when they do sign their young guys to bigger deals.
Fork these contracts over too quickly.
And that is a shame too, because if it goes well for them, it's great business. Because you got them before they really popped off.
Because
if you miss, it's a real miss.
Because it worked the first time.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah.
It's Tage Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
He's
one of the best value contracts in the NHL.
It worked the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got to work all these other times, right?
That's the thing, is if it works, it's wonderful business. If it fails, and this is true of every sports league. This is not just specifically
correct.
For the Sabres or even just hockey. But if you miss, it is a real miss that makes you look like a really poorly run organization. Again, in any sport, with any team.
And it's not that you've missed. It's that you've missed twice really badly and potentially now a third time.
Yep.
Cousins is already gone. Samuelsson,
you had people really pushing for the idea of even buying him out, let alone just trading him.
And that contract's still 2030.
Mm-hmm.
It's movable, because if Cousins is movable, so is that.
Yeah.
For example. But you didn't have a lot of games played before that contract got signed. And now you're looking at Luukkonen. If it's a one-year wonder, and Lukanen's getting paid 4.75 till 2029 and has a partial no-move clause kick in after this year, I'll tell you, if he plays poorly this year, I'd imagine something is going to happen. But also, where are you moving him at 4.75?
Yeah.
Where are you moving him? The no move becomes the least of your concerns. What team wants him at that contract? Now you got to work around that for a backup goaltender.
Yeah, it's not
You've
good.
Actually hamstrung yourself if this doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't work...
But that's what I mean. Like, it's if it works, it's great business. If not, it's horrendous.
And you are in the last year of your extension as the general manager. It becomes awfully easy to just leave you at the gate after the contract expires.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. Not the only Sabres news on the docket. A little under an hour ago, they did also announce that they have officially signed defenseman Roddy Mirka to his 3-year entry-level contract, though likely he is either going to be back in Seattle or in the AHL. So that was kind of the thing when he was drafted. He is not immediately going to be coming up to the Buffalo Sabres. He is not immediate help for the team. Again, not too surprising. That is the NHL draft. He didn't pick, you know, top two.
And if he does not play professionally this year, the contract does not kick in. So if he's still with Seattle,
yep,
the ELC does not kick in until he plays professionally. The D-Core is good enough where, like, for example, he's not going to get his 9 games for this year to get a look unless he really wows at camp.
Or a full-on disaster in terms of injuries where it's like, ugh, we got to.
They have enough depth.
Yeah,
they have Bryson, they have Jones, they have Johnson.
So it really would just be he would have to blow them away. A Zach Benson-like camp where you're still going to Seattle, but what was that?
Right. They need
the. Well, Benson was able to just come right up.
He would have to win the job.
Mm-hmm.
Is effectively, like, he'd have to win himself a spot somewhere.
Yeah.
Immediately. Like, the Connor Timmins trade, for example, like, totally backfires on you. And Radim Mirka, the right handed shot defense, has a stellar camp.
Mm hmm.
And it's like, okay, we have to look at this guy, right?
Yeah.
Have to. He would have to shine that brightly in order for that to be the case. But everything that I see about this. About the management style of Kevin Adams is that it's always reactive, except for when it's not. Those extensions, he tries to be proactive about it, and he tries to go and get his guys, recognize his core, and say, these are my guys. That is being proactive. Power, getting $8.35 million per year right now. He's yet to live up to that, and I know that there's still time. Tage, they get that deal done. They pick out Cousins and Samuelson and Lukanen. So there are times where he's trying to be proactive. But even with the deal with Lukanen, that's still reactive, which is a lot of what mostly – that is also what management is sometimes, is being reactive. Let's not go ahead and say that this is something that's like a character flaw exclusively to Adams. But oftentimes, it does look like you're not proactive enough. You're not having the foresight enough. Everything does look like it's just reactive for him.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why I want to bring up the extensions, because there are times where he is proactive. But there's never a roster move made with foresight. Save for one. McLeod.
It's a trade I kind of, I don't say live off of, that's not right, but it's just, it's the one where you look at, and we've mentioned it too, like you see the trade worked. He traded arguably a depreciating asset before it had really become that in Savoy, and gets a player McLeod that was ascending. When he got more ice time, he does not look like the player he was in Edmonton. He looks even better. He looks like a player that Edmonton absolutely should have been keeping and should have been giving more ice time
to. And they could have used him in the Stanley Cup final, where he was also effective against Florida. Why? Because he's got the speed, the wheels to keep up with McDavid. It's a rare quality to have in the National Hockey League, is to have that kind of speed. So there are times where he is proactive. I want to make sure I say that before I harp on the parts of where it looks like he is reactive to a fault. But that's also sometimes being a general manager.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's when he has been proactive, it has bit him harshly.
with two, now maybe three contract extensions that might have looked like a, unfortunately, a bad thing. There is one thing, and only one thing, that I could talk about positively when it comes to the good feelings potentially that you could have about a Sabre season this year. When you look at the overall offseason, and you see that the subtractions that were made, you lose a top six forward, but you were still one of the better scoring teams 5-on-5.
Mm-hmm.
You add to a defense that has struggled, and you do take care of one of the things that you wanted to, which was get someone to play next to Owen Power. That was one of the big check marks that was needed from the offseason. That only happens, though, because JJ wants out.
Yeah.
Say Paterka's fine. Do they do nothing? Maybe the Timmins trade still happens?
The Timmins trade probably still happens.
But then what?
No, I think that's a really good thing that you bring up is were they really going to, for the most part...
If Paterka didn't force his hand, which, and you didn't get Kesselring back...
Yeah, all reports point to that relationship soured quickly and he asked out. It's hard for me to believe that, but also they didn't do much anyways.
That's the thing.
It's hard for me to believe it, but you're right, yeah.
Was he doing nothing anyways? And it's tough. Because now at this point, any move that he makes is going to be met with criticism.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the moves that don't get made. It's a balancing act that you have to try to be fair about. Getting people to come to the Sabres is a hard thing. There is a point there. They are in the midst of a 14-year playoffless drought. With almost no sunlight peeking through. You make the subtractions, you make the additions. Are they Michael Kesselring away from making the playoffs? This roster?
Yeah, I think most of us agreed even at the time, no.
Are they Alex Lyon and Kesselring from the playoffs?
Nope.
No. You still needed more. And you still have a group of players that play in Rochester that are worth something.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Roseanne had a very good year last year in Rochester. Yuri Kulik.
Yuri Kulik has ascended. He's a top line projection right now on the Sabres.
Yeah, and I don't want to put words in your mouth either, but you seem pretty comfortable with the idea that he'll be center number one.
He is going to be the one seed. Mm-hmm. I think he surpasses Norris already. Availability helps. But the other thing that you're looking at here is, what is it that you can look at? And the only theory I can come up with is teams randomly make the playoffs all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I look at Montreal and Ottawa last year.
Yeah, and we mentioned it in different sports of football. The Bills broke their drought in a very, really, that's the year you did it kind of year.
Exactly. A roster that you were like, okay, that's when you did it. And the Sabres roster is not awful. As a matter of fact, where they finished last year is not comparable to the talent that they have. But this looks like an 85-point roster. That's not good enough. Again. And if J.J. Paterka did not force his hand, what does your offseason even look like? Is this operation run it back again?
Man, that's, you know, funny enough, that's even more bleak. People would still have, Sabres fans, a lot of them, really love Paterka. I was one of them. Wanted to see him grow more as a complete player, but what you still had was fun and awesome and exciting.
I mentioned routinely that if I wanted to have JJ traded, it is to get an upgrade at the forward position.
But, man, the vibes already are not great for what they did.
Correct.
If all of a sudden the vibes were, oh, it's literally the same team outside of a small, pretty good trade during draft weekend, and you pick up Alex Lyon, that might actually be a tougher sell.
Yes.
Because I think right now you can at least go, the defense is better.
You say the defense is better, and it's a fact. It is a fact.
How much better? Not sure. You're going to find out when games are played. We'll see if guys of Kesselring, if he's given more ice time, if it's a hit. If he's another Ryan McLeod-esque move for Adams.
But it's still fact.
But it's still something. I think if you went into this offseason and where we're sitting today, and you, as you mentioned, J.J. Paterka didn't ask out, or that move just doesn't even happen, I think it's an even harder sell. Because so many people, even with everything going on, wanted so desperately. Just show me that you're desperate, that you're also desperate, that you're here to make moves, make a splash, do something. And then for that to equal running back 2, 3.0,
right,
outside of one move that they kind of regularly make in the offseason, one, maybe two moves, I think that would be a tougher sell. I really, really do. Even if, even with keeping Paterka and making a small move there and picking up a goaltender like Alex
and Ryan, oddly enough,
I think it'd be a harder sell.
Oddly enough, say JJ wants an extension.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to stay here, right?
Yeah.
There's $7.3 million at the cap.
Mm-hmm.
There's suddenly a cap team running it back.
Yeah, and it's not like you're in a situation where Florida, we keep making the playoffs, we keep making cup runs, of course we're just going to bring back our entire group. It would be...
You'd be a cap team for a team that had a bottom five finish.
Yeah, and man. When you put it like that, it's just... I can't believe I'm going to say this. You're almost thankful of how the offseason went if you had those two options. If you had those two options, you probably take the one we're at now. Because the other one, you're a bottom five finish. You're kind of around where you always are.
You do have to make
and you signed everyone back.
You probably do make a move to create cap. It's probably where Samuelson comes in again.
Right, maybe.
Maybe, but then again, the general manager felt bad for the fans about the misinformation.
Mm-hmm.
Not about the fact that you're keeping a player that has, at this point, earned a good amount of the scorn from the fan base. If there's a player that wears a lot of the scorn, it's Samuelson at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Help him start over for his sake.
Yeah, I don't know necessarily where his career goes, but he has entered that stratosphere. I think Dylan Cousins entered it last year, too, of just, man, maybe a different city, a different environment is going to be great for you.
Because you're currently wearing what this team's problems are. And Jack Quinn gets a 2-year bridge deal,
mm-hmm.
but it's double the market value that it looked like he was going to get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just all in all, a very strange offseason, but I think we kind of got there by the end.
And
it maybe even could have been worse.
And last year, compared to this year, the player you purge just so happened to make the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, that's usually how that goes.
803-0550 on the Bo Byram signing, 2 years for him, a little over $6 million per year. The Sabres do not get a trade done. And instead, looks like Byram will be back for another year or two, unless they could still trade him today. And also, Tyler Dunn, 7 on Dalton Kincaid. I got a good question for you on Kincaid. We'll get to Josh in Newfoundland, though. Josh, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, crew. Good morning, chat. Good morning, everyone there as well. Have yourself a great day. And speaking of great day, Bo and Byram, a 2-year deal for that cap hit. You know what that tells me? That tells me that Adams is still got something in the works, that Adams is going to be bringing in a top 6 forward and spend to the cap floor. How many times can we say that as Sabres fans that we're going to spend the extra money there as well? I do believe there is something strong and brewing here now. Like Joe said, we gave up Paterka and we got a couple of, character guys, better defensive players. Paterka didn't want to be here. He's a one-dimensional player, really good player. But, when defense, we all know about that. Now we get Doan, who's got that DNA genetics with him, cool, calm, under pressure. I know it's going to happen. And Kesselring, this guy is quick on the blue line. And Tage Thompson and Kesselring were going back-to-back last year as far as goal, hardest shots resulting in a goal scored. And so he's got a bullet of a shot. He's very quick, and he's a coachable guy. And that's exactly what Lindy Ruff has. The more tools we can give Lindy Ruff, the better we're going to be. Are we going to score as many goals? Maybe not. We'll see. But we'll be better defensively, and our guys are getting older. And I do believe that we will be in contention for that playoff spot. Listen, guys, always great to be talking to you. Have yourself a great day. Till next time. Be well, and go Sabres!
All right, Josh.
Thanks, Josh.
Thank you.
It's as good as you could do.
It's as good as you could do. And the thing I always get to is, I think the best way to think the Sabres are having a good offseason is to not ever look at anyone else's.
Uh-huh.
That's it.
Yeah.
Other teams have also tried to improve, and those teams have done, all of them, more. Mm-hmm. Almost every team has done more. The Sabres have done very little. The Paterka trade is something that, again, is like kind of forced on them. And maybe they came out with that and are better defensively. And I tell you a million times, like, the Lions signing is a good one. They needed to do something there instead of just trying to roll back James Reimer or trust Levi and UPL.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that's an optimist's look, and that's an explanation for how it could go well. The difficult thing is there are other teams. There are other teams, and some of them got a lot better. Some of them at least tried to get a lot better. The Islanders have gotten a lot better, have they not?
The Islanders, well, they got the number one overall pick, mm-hmm. and then they added a couple other pieces. Montreal added Noah Dobson from the Islanders, right?
Right.
And Montreal's one. I'm looking right now, actually. If you look at like Eastern Conference odds, they've fallen so far behind teams that were riding right with them for the last. Like right now, the Sabres are only better in their odds to win the East, which of course is like a pipe dream. They're only better than two teams. The two teams are kind of funny that it's Boston and Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
those are the two teams they're better than. But plus 4,500, Ottawa, who you were right there with, neck and neck, year after year after year. Ottawa's plus 1,200. They are four times more likely to go deep into the playoffs, just by the odds, than the Sabres are. And that's reflective of where they are. They're far beyond where the Sabres are.
Yep.
Montreal was a team I never thought would pass them. I thought Detroit might and Ottawa might, but Montreal's jumped them. And
it is
like that. Those are the teams that we were comparing them to for years, and they're clearly in last amongst all of them.
Yeah. Well, the other part of it is, like, glad to hear you positive, Josh. Thanks for calling. We've kind of talked about this, like the one-dimensional blast on a player. Like, Paterka's one-dimensional. Okay, good. Yeah. Glad he's gone. Byram is, too. Byram is a one-dimensional player. He helps you offensively. He does not really help you defensively. He's a liability. But if you throw him with Dahlin, maybe you can hide that.
Like, where do they, like, in the division, where does their biggest move rank compared to these other teams? Like, all due respect to Josh and, like, the optimism for, like, Kesselring, but it's not a bigger move than the Red Wing signing, trading for John Gibson, is it? Doesn't that move the meter a lot more than anything the Sabres did?
They would hope. I mean, goalie can be voodoo, but yeah.
A little bit. The Canadiens, who I just mentioned with Dobson, that's a bigger move. They added a $10 million defenseman. The Sabres might have tried to add him, but they didn't. That's a bigger move.
And that's a team. Again, you have to chase down these teams.
Right. At one point, you were level with them, trying to figure out how, none of them could do it. And now they're all above you. I don't know that Ottawa's done it, but Ottawa has, Ottawa made the playoffs.
Pretty nice number posted yesterday for Give 716. Did you happen to notice, Marty, that in the grand total, right smack in the middle of it, there was a beautiful 43?
I did not notice that.
$1.443 million.
I usually, I'm a numbers person, right? As soon as something flashes, happening? I did not see the. I focus on the 1.4. That's what I focused on. And then what's another 43,000, right? Well, it's my number, darn it. Should have known. So what a day. What a fantastic day. When we were done at 1 p.m. at KeyBank on Sheridan Drive, we were already like in the what? 900,000. And then I wanted to see, and look, I forgot to check in at 2 p.m. I wanted to see if we raised more money between the 12 and 1 o'clock hour on our show, mm-hmm. or if When Bills Live with Bronny and Tasker raised more money between 1 and 2. I wanted to compare. I wanted to compete, but I forgot to check at 2 o'clock.
They're on for 2 hours. It's not even fair.
I was going to compare our first hour to their first hour. That's what
But everyone knows they're not done after the first hour.
It's a tie. It's a tie because I did not follow through, so I'm going to keep it a tie.
Well, because of your imminent departure from.
There's
not-
also Coletta in there because there's 36. There's 89 Tuck. There's 44 Zetnik. Like, you can use all the numbers and combine them. So there's a lot of numbers reference in there.
Well, after you left our on-location setup at KeyBank, a gentleman named Mike popped his head in the door through the doors and quickly said to me, "So, is he staying or going?"
That was talking about Bo Byram?
About Bo Byram.
Yeah, okay. I thought you meant me. He was like, "No,
well, he was then immediately disappointed to learn that you had already left. So I had to calm him on that front.
Yes.
He was incredibly gracious with his compliments for the show, but he was really in tune with this Byram discussion point. And I think this is interesting. Like, we've been talking about him for so long.
Yeah.
And this is not completely unusual, obviously, but it's a little different than a lot of your going into the off-season type situations. What's the next contract going to look like for this player? Simply because, from the general manager's standpoint, it was very wide open. Kevin Adams said, basically, if the right deal is there, to improve our team, then we could see us making this deal. If we retain Bo, great. Like, we like our defense with Bo Byram in it. So I don't think it's always like that. Normally, like, you just look at your list of free agents and you just go boom, 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 boom. You expect. But yes, I think it has become, like Mike validated yesterday, a real talking point that even with the two-year deal done, people are genuinely wondering, like, is Bo still going to be here when this season starts?
Well, my first thought is absolutely 100%. And the reason is, look, Bo Byram's a really good player. Bo Byram could be a key to your success, a big key to your success, playing along Rasmus Dahlin for the next couple of years, and maybe more. Look, I know everybody's saying it's 2 years, it's walking him to free agency. What's to say July 1 next year, Bo Byram, and after the Sabres hopefully make the playoffs and get on a run, and he's like, you know what? Playing with Rasmus Dahlin for the next 6 years is what I want to do, and it's going to be great, and we're successful. Boom, July 1, announce an extension on Bo Byram, and then it's like, who? Like, many, many, many things can happen. But if I had to bet the farm on, will Bo Byram be in the lineup game one or on the roster, because you never know what could happen in training camp, hopefully nothing injury-wise, but on the roster game one of the regular season when the Sabres host the New York Rangers on October 9th at 7 p.m. on MSG and WGR, like 100%, I would say Bo Byram would be there. Could that change? It could always change. And I know people are going to dissect this whole thing, Duffer, and say, well, when the GM says, if we have a good offer, we're going to trade him, that makes it lukewarm. You may not like the guy so much. How about it's honesty? It's honesty that, look, if somebody comes in with a really good offer, we'll look at it. Most times GMs lie. They say, hey, that guy is not going to be traded. 2 weeks later, that guy is packing his bags and is getting traded. Or the coach is not going anywhere. 3 days later, the coach is getting fired. This was honest. This was honest, and we like Bo. We're prepared to match any offer. And if somebody gives us a trade offer that's interesting, we'll listen to it. But at the end of the day, this was, we got him signed to a two-year deal. We think he's playing, well, we, you know, people on the outside think he'll play with Rasmus Dahlin, and that will be your top pair. And that will be a part of fixing how you gave up too many goals in that last year. Plain and simple. So, I don't know. I mean, should I say or should I go to Clash? Like, I think we could play that game with a lot of players moving forward. There's a lot of guys that are going to be RFAs, UFA next year. Are they going? Are they staying? There's a lot of
Not a lot of Sabres.
Huh?
Not a lot of Sabres fall into that category.
No, but there's a lot of guys around the league, right, that we could just speculate on. Should they stay? Should they go? Would they go? Look, Toronto did that song and dance with Marner all year last year. Well, he ended up leaving. Well, that happens. But I think right now, for the start of the season, Bo Byram is definitely here, in my opinion. Unless there was an offer that blew the Sabres right out of the water, I don't see it happening.
What else happened after our show ended yesterday?
Release the schedule. The releasing of the schedule. Oh, by the way, Rob Ray did a really good job. And I know it's not NFL where you can't do the schedule release video and go over all 17 games. There's 82 games in the NHL. You're not going all over. But you can pick some and have some fun with it. And I thought that the whole wing set up, the pictures and the video, I thought it was great. I didn't get a chance to watch all of the teams because a lot of teams did their, you know, schedule release videos. I did not understand the Calgary Flames Rambo with Lomberg, you know, in the swamp and all of that. I didn't get it. Like, it was weird. I love the LA Kings one. I don't know. Go Google the LA Kings one if you haven't seen it. Basically, guys that don't know hockey at all that are, like, asking an old computer kind of version of AI to come up with a schedule, and they have some really funny little bits in there. Like, the first time the computer says, all 82 games should be played against the Anaheim Ducks for maximum success. Like, that's a great shot at the Ducks that are down the road. Like, I thought it was really good. So, but I think the Sabres did a fantastic job. I'll say fantastic, a great job with Razor and the Wings and doing a few tidbits of the schedule.
What about the schedule itself?
Okay, so that took me up until today. Like, I wrote the schedule down yesterday in my calendar, and I think there's 3 days that the Sabres and the Bills play on the same day. Out of the 17 games that the Bills play, there's three.
Two. So was that the first thing you looked for?
That is actually, yeah, because that usually means that you and I are going on the road for those.
Not always.
Well, one of them is a home game, so we're not. But there's two in December. There is a Seattle game, and I think it's a Devils game, back-to-back Sunday in December that looks like we may be going on the road, which we may be going to Seattle, which I've never been, and I would love to see what it's like over there. So I was excited about that. Maybe the Marty and Duffer show will be going to Seattle on the road and check it out. I put it on my calendar. That's great. But then the first thing that stood out to me is the start of the season, right? Like, 7 of the first 10 games are at home. 10 of the first 14 games are at home. Like, that is an opportunity to give yourself a really, really good start. Mm-hmm. Now, will the start make your season? If you go, I don't know, in the first 14, you go 9-5, let's just say, right? With 10 of those games at home. Does that make your season? Absolutely not. But if you go 5-9, I hate to say it, but the vibes are not going to be really good if 10 of the first 14 games at home to start the season and you go 5-9. So to me, that was the first thing I looked at, is the way that the season opens and the month of October, especially leaking into the first week of November, where 10 of the first 14 games are at KeyBank Center.
Mm-hmm. What about the opposite of that? When they go road heavy,
December.
Yeah,
that's
one,
like,
of them.
Usually where there's been some struggle in the schedule, right? Remember, like, a few years back, you're almost first in the league in November, and then December came and it tumbled. Like, December is daunting.
Well, you're never going to get me to bite on that anymore, because I really don't care about home or away games. Like, I don't. It doesn't. You play the games. There's 82 of them this year for one last time. Here's my take, since you didn't ask. Here's my immediate take.
Well, I wasn't done, but I'll ask you right there.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I mean, I don't want to go to the end of the season just yet. So I want your take on, like, maybe the start of the year, or what was first sticking out when you looked at it.
First thing that stood out was there were 2 afternoon games in week 2 of the season. 12:30 on a Monday, 1 p.m. on a Saturday. Yes. After that, not a lot of afternoon games. So I will cherish and hold dear week 2 of the NHL season, because afternoon games appeal to me. I also
do love afternoon games as well. You, like, have a different feeling in the arena. And look, I think there's 4 home games that are like 12:30 or 1 o'clock this season. Out of 41, I can't say that that's a big drop off from the past years, because I don't remember how many we had last year, the year before. But I also think it's a little bit less. Usually we'd have probably 6 or 7, maybe 6. So go from 6 to 4 is not that bad, but it's a little bit less than it used to be.
We don't have to talk about the Mammoth again after November 12th. New Year's Eve in Dallas seems like an unfortunate tradition in the making, because that's 2 years in a row now that they're going to be in Dallas on New Year's Eve at a less than friendly start time for Buffalo. So why? Anyway, that's my question there. And
doesn't give us much time to get out of the studio and be able to catch the fireworks.
It's not like you go out with us anymore anyway, so let's be real. January.
Where did you go last year?
Nowhere, because everybody went their separate ways.
I went home too.
Team bonding, New Year's Eve.
We're bonding this year.
Yeah. January was nice.
We're all going to producer Jeff's house, by the way. He just said it was his fault last year, so he's all inviting us to his house for New Year's Eve.
Well, that seems forced, on my opinion. So sorry, Jeff. I didn't mean to make you feel that way. January 17th, 19th, and 24th, we have three afternoon games in a five-game stretch. So I'm excited about that as well.
Yes, I like that as well. So we're into January, but you know what? Like I mentioned, December seemed daunting. Like for me, when I was playing, I looked at the schedule and I looked at road trips, right? When do we go on the West Coast? Mm-hmm. Like, when do we go into Florida? You know, when is it going to be? Because there's always a time where you go on the road for 10 days or more. December 2nd, the Sabres are going to leave to go to Philly and play there on the 3rd. So they leave on December 2nd. They don't come back to Buffalo until probably December 15th, mm-hmm. the day after they play Seattle. So they're going to leave on a Tuesday and come back on a Monday, almost 2 weeks later. That's a two-week road trip in December. And you play six games in that 2 weeks. That's why, like, I don't mind the road and the home and all of that. When you look at it, you play 41 at home, 41 on the road. Everybody does the same. But when you have six games in a two-week span and you're not coming home at all in that, I think it gets tiring a little bit towards the end. So that's one thing, like as a former player, I'm looking at it, I'm like, ooh, like going from Philly to Winnipeg to Calgary to Edmonton to Vancouver, Seattle, and then coming back home. Like I feel like that's got a little bit of a heavier feel on my shoulders looking at it.
Well, and it's only one back to back in there. It's not that cumbersome in my opinion.
Which is true. And depending on the team, some teams like to stay overnight so they don't travel right after the game. You don't go to bed at 2:30 in the morning. You go to bed, you get up the next day. Maybe you fly out to the next city. Maybe you practice in where you are and then fly out to the city so you have the evening. So there's ways to change it up, change your routine, right? So maybe between Winnipeg and Calgary, you do it one way. And then you have some time after Vancouver, stay around in Vancouver a couple of days, go to Seattle early. Like there's a way to get it done. But I feel like that's a little bit longer than what I've seen. Look, the West Coast teams do that all the time. Like how many times have we had a team come into Buffalo, LA or Anaheim or Vancouver? And they're like, we're in game five of a 7-game, you know, 16 days long road trip. And they do that often. This is a little bit different being in Buffalo. We don't usually get those 2 weeks long road trip.
What did you think of the schedule from a compression or lack thereof standpoint based on the Olympic break? They don't have like an astronomical surge in back-to-back games, which of course has been a talking point the last couple of years. The hope was last year they were going to turn it around in the back-to-back situations, and that didn't happen. But it's not like they have a crazy number of back-to-backs this year. Are you surprised by that based on the three-week break in February?
I'm surprised by that. But one of the first thing that, you know, when I printed my schedule, like the full schedule, the calendar, right, put it on the fridge, I was surprised by the amount of Wednesday night games that we had this year. And I think that's the way the league has added potentially, and I haven't looked at all the team's schedule, but you know, on Wednesday, there was always only two games, maybe three, right? It wasn't a Wednesday night type of league. It was Tuesday, 12 games, 13 games, Thursday, 14 games, Saturday, 15 games, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. I feel like the Sabres are playing more on Wednesdays, especially early in the year. Two in October, three in November, one early December. And I think that's the way for the league to lighten up the back-to-backs. And then you play on Wednesdays. So instead of playing Tuesday, maybe Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, you know, Tuesday, or you don't play on Tuesday, you do a Wednesday, you add a game in there. So I feel like it has added a midweek flavor this year that it was never there so much for the NHL and the Sabres.
Mm. Well, any thoughts on just the break in general and what it means coming out in March and the sprint to the finish, which, you know, is February 25th, I guess, onward?
February 25th, you start with three road games. You go Jersey and then a trip back-to-back down in Florida. After that, starting in March 1st, I feel like the schedule sets up very nicely for the Sabres to make that final push. With the home games, again, in the end of the season, you get 7 home, 4 away in the last 11 games. So it's 2-1, right? Like 2-1 ratio. I think it sets you up well. The start of the season sets you up well to play well at home and build, you know, maybe a winning record. And then the end of the season with 7 of the last 11 games being at home, I feel like it sets you up really well also. That's all good and dandy when you look at it on papers. You got to do it, you know, in that time. Mm-hmm. You got to take advantage of your home games. You got to be a good home team, but that doesn't mean he can't be a good road team, because at the end of the day, December may be the month that's going to make or break your season, really, by being a good overall team and playing well on the road. So, but it sets up nicely. I think if that's the year, look, it's been 14 years without playoffs. If that's the year and the Sabres are in a chase or in a playoff spot, mm-hmm. and you get the crowd really buying into it, and 7 of the last 11 games are at home, and the building is full, and I think it could be a fun spring. Now, the other side of the coin could be, those last 7 home games may not be so much fun, but I'm really hoping that it's in a position where the last 7 home games, the building is full, it's going nuts, it's pushing the team to get in or stay in a playoff spot, and we get some really fun spring hockey coming up.
It doesn't change one year to the next. You play all of the opponents.
Yes.
It never changes. Dare I ask if you are concerned, excited, interested in any particular matchup?
No, I have not broken it down, because this is the last year.
Good. This makes 2 of us.
This is the last year with an imbalanced schedule. And what I mean by imbalanced schedule is there's teams in your division that you play 3 times, teams you play 4 times. I have no idea who the Sabres play 3 times in their division and 4 this year, because I don't care. Right. Now, I do like a home and home, a Friday home in October and a Saturday road in Toronto early on. Get that buzz early on, that matchup. That's one thing that stood out to me. Toronto, home and home, early October, well, late October, but early in the season. I love that. But I don't care if we play Montreal 4 times or 3 times. I don't care if we play Boston and Ottawa 4 times or 3 times. Mm-hmm. We're going to play every team. I haven't really looked at who do we play down the stretch to say, could we be in a playoff battle with the Ottawa Senators? Do we have them in the last 10 games? I haven't, because we're going to play them at some point, mm-hmm. right? We're going to go. Although that LA Kings video was funny. They're like, when do we want to play the Vegas Golden Knights? Oh, definitely late in the season, because half their team will be on long-term injured reserve by that point. It's an easy game. Like, there were some really good, fun things like that. Mm-hmm. But I'm not looking at the schedule that way this year. That's not what crosses my mind. What crosses my mind is, can you get off to a strong start? Mm-hmm. And the schedule is, there's no excuse, right? There's no like, 10 of our first 14 games are on the road. It's going to be a tough start. And, you know, maybe we're not going to be in the best position at the start of the season. No, no excuse. Get it done. It's right there for you.
You want a random observation on my part? The last game before the Christmas break is December 23rd in Ottawa.
Yes.
So 25 years ago, when I used to work in Ottawa on the Sens radio, we also had a December 23rd game in Ottawa. And when I came out after the post-game show, my truck was like smashed in on the front corner. Somebody had like demoed it in the parking lot. And so I'm trudging home with a messed up vehicle on the night before Christmas Eve going, this is fine.
This is fine. It's all going to be good.
Yeah.
Santo will bring me a new one tomorrow.
No note was left. Oh.
Well, okay. So if you want to look at it this way, I kind of like that the Sabres are going to be home right after Christmas, right? They play one game and then they leave for the New Year's Eve trip or whatnot. But on the flip side of that, after the bye week, Olympic break, all of that, you're on the road. So, you know, you come back to Buffalo for a couple of days of practice, pack it up, and go on the road again. But I do like that Boston game on December 27th. And that, well, not an afternoon game, a Saturday night game, but I think that's going to be a fun one.
Did you say Boston on December 27th?
Yes.
That's Boston with Casey Mittelstadt.
Yes.
That's
Henry Yokiariu. No.
No, but that was the whole time period when Casey, went ahead of time. I wonder if he'll be here early for that one.
I don't know, but I'll say this. Casey, just maybe stay in Boston or stay in the Northeast and don't go to Minnesota for the Christmas break.
Well, the whole schedule is out with creative influence behind it in its presentation. It's unveiling yesterday. You can find that Sabres.com and Sabres Social.